This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, it's 8 o'clock, and it's Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. This hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Hi, Danny O'Neill.
Hi, how are you?
We're awesome. It's good to have you in with us, man.
Yeah, I was going to put a mask on to see if that would make me better in the final 6 minutes of this segment.
I'd
just become a ruthless, cold-blooded assassin.
Like Sue Bird.
Yeah, and you'd be like, 14 points in the final 6 minutes. We've never seen anything like that.
Dude, she was crazy.
That was
yesterday.
Awesome.
So if you, tough.
If you watch that and don't get pumped for the finals and like, man, what a the Seattle Times did the 10 top athletes in Seattle sports history, and she was on it, and my reaction was, that's the wrong Storm player. Should be Lauren Jackson. Lauren Jackson was the best player on those championship teams. You know what? She should have been on it. She's absolutely right. She might have been underrated based on that performance. That was awesome.
It was.
She's not the best player on that team anymore.
How old is she?
Well, she's been in the league 10 years, 12 years?
No, more than that.
I think it's more than that.
I think 17 years.
17 years.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true, because I'm old now.
So she's pushing 40.
Yeah. And she comes up. I mean, she's probably the third best player, maybe fourth best player on that team right now, right? Joelle Lloyd.
Not in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and Brianna Stewart is the league MVP.
2002 to present, she is 37.
Wow.
Yes.
And she's ruthless.
She was killer. Although she was saying that she got hit in the nose. I don't think that she hit her in the nose. When she was on the ground, she was like, they hit my nose. They hit my nose. Did you see that?
Yeah.
They didn't hit her nose on the ground, did they?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't think so.
I think it just really hurt.
I don't think it matters with that mask on. Everything's quite uncomfortable, but
no
it didn't
kidding.
Matter.
That was awesome. Baller. What a really cool experience. It's first time I've really sat down and watched the Storm was last night, and I'm hooked, man. When's the next game?
Like,
when's
Friday.
Final start Friday?
Game on, Mystics.
All right. I'm setting my appointment now. I'm in.
You're going to fight Black Magic going up against the Mystics.
Is that true?
Well, I don't know. It's the Mystics. I was trying to make a cheap
play on
words.
The Mystics are in Washington?
Yeah.
Is that the team that used to be in Connecticut?
No, that was the Mohegan Sun.
I think they're still there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I just figured because of Mystic Connecticut and Mystic Pizza and all that they were.
No, it's because the NBA team is called the Wizards.
Right.
So this is the counterpoint to that.
On that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. That makes some sense. Yeah. They didn't want to go with a play on bullets, huh? They decided to leave that alone and just kind of roll past that. I saw the Bullets play right before they stopped being the Bullets in the Forum in L.A. When I went out to L.A., I wanted to go to Make Pilgrimage, the fabulous Forum. So I saw a Laker team led by, I think, Sadale Threet and Nick Van Exel.
Yeah, Van Exel.
Take on.
And plus Eldon Campbell.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Big E?
I won't tell you what I say about Eldon Campbell, but I watched them.
Can I tell you that Eldon Campbell, when he was in the Sonics locker room, would sit with no pants on spread
I believe
eagle?
That. There's something about Eldon Campbell's shape as a person. Like, he has a very unique shape as a person, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, they were taking on a Washington Bullets squad led by Rod Strickland and George Mureson.
Mm-hmm.
What a game. You get an opportunity to watch Georgie Mureson and Rod Strickland taking the ball to the hoop on every play. It was a blast.
There's two things that are my favorite things about Rod Strickland. The first being that he went to DePaul, which I always thought was the coolest place to come from.
Yes.
Like Mark Aguirre came from DePaul. Like when you came from DePaul, that was awesome. The second thing was, for some reason, the Wu-Tang Clan, huge Rod Strickland fans.
I can see that makes perfect sense. Nothing about that is surprising.
Constantly name-checking Rod Strickland.
Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? All right, Danny, can we talk a few minutes of football, and then I want to get to your story here that you wrote about Jake Browning. But let's start with the Seahawks for a couple of minutes, because Brock and I have been kind of tossing this back and forth, and we haven't had an opportunity to do it as much on the air. It's actually been more off the air. It's just trying to figure out why it is that the perception of this team is so different locally from nationally this year. The national pundits primarily, and I understand there's going to be exceptions to everything, but in general, there's been a real negative view, Brock, of this team.
This team's dysfunctional. Pete can't rally the crew anymore. They're done. He's done. All the Pro Bowlers have left. That this is anywhere from a 4 to maybe 7 win team.
And Vegas mimics that. They have them essentially a 40-1 to win the Super Bowl, 20th in the league. That's reflective of a national attitude more than anything else on where the money
Danny's
is.
Danny's good buddy Bill Barnwell has him in the mid-20s. Most of the ESPN power rankings, I think I saw the latest one, The Ringer. This is the 23rd, 24th best roster. If this team didn't have Russell Wilson, it'd be the worst roster in all the NFL, was an article I read
locally,
last night.
There's this story story of they've gotten rid of all the bad people and now they're going to move forward and it's Pete's team again and they're back to their philosophy and identity and like some
blogger,
of these young guys.
Hawk Blogger had a poll and almost 3,000 people responded to that poll. And let's see, I can do the math. 70% thought that this team locally was a 9-plus win team. Actually, the number one answer was 10-plus games. 36%, 9 games, 34%, 7 or fewer was just 12%.
Danny, why the split?
Because we tend to be overly optimistic about our own teams.
Think so?
Yes. Now, my perception in talking to people, and this is obviously my circle of friends and people I know, I would say that the most devoted Seahawks fans are the ones who, when I tell them I think they're going to go 9-7 and may or may not get into the playoffs, they mostly say, I'd be happy with that. I think that that would be a good season given where they're at. But I think that when you ask common fans, you sit there and ask, how are you going to go? We're going to be okay. We're going to win 10 or 11 games. And you're like, well, that's a really good season, actually. But that would be, I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl, but they're going to win 10 or 11 games. You win 10 or 11 games, and you're going to be on the short list of teams that got a shot to win the Super Bowl. You're going to get into the playoffs with 10 wins almost certainly. So the split is certainly that in football, and I would say on defense especially, defensive players are rated on reputation more than accomplishment. And that so they talk about the long tail of technology, that sort of the thing that follows. We actually see the result of something years after it's happened. I think that the credit and the feeling that the Seahawks lost all these great players, that would have been true if all these guys had left 2 years ago. This wasn't a great defense last season. And people that are here and watch this team know that. They know that the great defense was 2012 to 2015, really. That's when it was a great defense. And really, you could even say maybe when Cam holds out, that was kind of the point where it took that step down. And they know that. And I think that anybody who watches this team says there's a huge uncertainty about what they're going to do this season on defense. I think they're going to be better on offense. I think the question is, if you tell me that they're better on defense than they were a year ago, I do think they're going to win 10 games and get into the playoffs.
I think actually last year I would not disagree with that, but I think just in being around some of the national folks, Danny, they look at last year and say that defense, yeah, you're right, it started to erode. You know, Richard got hurt mid-season, that Michael Bennett slowed down, that there was no Cam, and you know, Earl was banged up and in and out, and that's why you started to see that erosion, and now, oh my gosh, now they're fully out. Now the Band-Aid is fully ripped off. There's no Cam for the entire season. There's no Bennett for the entire season. There's no go through the list of the Earl. And all of a sudden, a defense that, you know, was still hanging on to a degree last year to get them 9 wins, wow, now they're all out. They're checked out, and this defense is even going to take another step backwards.
They gave up 400 yards passing to Deshaun Watson at home. And that was with everybody. That was
suboptimal.
Cam and Earl are both there for that
they couldn't
game.
Stop. They could not stop the Texans. The Texans had over 500 yards of offense that game. They could not stop them.
That game in Tennessee in the second half where they folded up. And they gave up all those long runs. Yeah. This was
3rd and 11 against Jacksonville late in the game. The entirety of the Rams game. I mean, there were some real bad games last year for that defense.
Those are games after the injuries. I'm talking about before the injuries. Fair. Because I do believe that the consensus is they got old and hurt. Mm-hmm. And I think that they got old. Then there was the injury. That was an average defense last year if everybody stays healthy.
See, my problem with the national, I understand what you're saying, is that local people are too close to it and we want everything to be great. I understand that, but I don't think the national group is much better. I don't think they've got a better idea on it at all, because I think they only change narratives when it suits them. If you're a national football pundit, you probably have a good sense of 5 to 15 guys on the Seahawks and kind of who they are. And that's not your fault. I mean, you can only know in depth so many teams and so many people. And, you know, the names you knew on this team are no longer there. So the easiest narrative is they can't possibly be the same team. No Michael Bennett, no Richard Sherman, no Earl Thomas, no Cam Chancellor. How could they be good? Those are the players that made them good. There's no willingness to find out whether or not anybody else and is going to be good and is going to take their place. And I think national pundits are notoriously late on figuring out, or wrong on figuring out, who the new hot team is going to be.
Completely agree. I 100%. They're blind in a different way.
They are.
They're blind in a different way. And when you look at this team, I even heard it. We were talking yesterday. When you specifically were talking about Dante Johnson and guy is let go by the 49ers and comes up here to start. And what triggered in my head was that he's absolutely right. But you know what? Brandon Browner was out there starting in 2011, and you looked at it, and you're like, how in the hell is this guy going to play NFL? They're going to start him at cornerback, and he hasn't even been in the league the last couple years. This is a guy that he could not play in the NFL. Like, he couldn't find an NFL team. So I think that if you have an optimistic appraisal of the Seahawks, you are betting on the fact that Pete Carroll can do it again. That Pete Carroll and John Schneider, that John Schneider's draft, he hasn't lost his touch about finding players, and Pete Carroll hasn't lost the ability to find young guys and put them in positions to succeed, and that all these guys who we look at, and they got this leftover from San Francisco, and they got Tedrick Thompson, who's a fourth-round pick, and he's going to be playing the spot Earl Thomas isn't.
Same things you said about Cam Chancellor, same things you said about a bunch of those guys. We remember this one. You remember what Mike Golick was saying about their wide receiving core?
Sidney Rice.
Right. I mean, like, everybody had the most derisive.
Well, how about a guy in the middle?
You got Sidney Rice? I mean, like, that's going to work? you get Sidney Rice?
Sidney Rice.
Come on.
How about a guy that's kind of local and national? A kid that grew up in Aberdeen.
Right? Northwest guy, Seattle guy.
He donated $1 million to the Inferno of Northeastern Washington.
West Coast
he had
guy.
Season tickets to the Huskies for years and years.
Has he ever said that?
Huh?
Has he ever mentioned that?
What's that?
Colin?
That he donated $1 million?
No,
to
that
the
he
Inferno?
Had season tickets to the Huskies?
I think he has,
every time he's
gone.
How about the last time he was
season
on?
Season tickets to the Huskies, West Coast guy.
On with us a couple weeks ago, Danny, to your point about Pete. Here's Colin's take on Coach Carroll.
So this has always been my pushback on Pete Carroll. Kumbaya, high energy, players talk, get into politics, and what are you left with? The worst offensive line in football, your star players smacking you around, Richard Sherman now is ripping the team. You know, to me it feels like Seattle right now is a mess. Pete's got 1 year left in his deal. I don't think it ends well.
It doesn't end well.
He's so full of it, though.
Huh?
Colin's so full of it.
New York, L.A.
For the last few years, it's been, what do you need? You need a quarterback, you need an owner, you need a coach. What do the Seahawks have? Right. They got a quarterback in Russell Wilson, a coach in Pete Carroll, an owner in Paul Allen. They're fine.
Okay.
Now all of a sudden, that Pete's a problem, and he's a kumbaya guy.
Okay, hold on. So that's one perspective. I'll tell you what is. I'll use one of your words, Danny. I love it. Instructive. Here's an instructive piece of evidence in this whole debate or conversation. Peter King. Peter King, who I think was on the outside, and then he got a good look. He actually traveled out to Minnesota for week 3. And do you remember his column following that game? Like, man, this team's not that bad. This team's not. Oh, and by the way, do you see who Peter King picked to be the offensive player of the year? Did you see this yesterday?
Rashad Penny?
It was not Rashad Penny.
Jermaine Ifedi.
It was not Jermaine Ifedi.
Who was it?
This via his column yesterday. The offensive rookie of the year in the NFL this year will be Michael Dixon.
Wow.
Punter.
Offensive.
That's
punter.
So he's saying they don't play offense. The punter is absolutely the punter is the least offensive player.
He said, I don't even know.
They're out there on an offense on fourth down for the offense.
They're defensive players.
That's kind of what I was wondering.
But your team has the ball. You're on offense.
Yeah. Nah, you're a defensive player.
From Peter's column.
And you laughed at me when I said that.
From Peter's column. I don't even know if a punter's an offensive or defensive player. But I'm giving Dixon this nod because he'll lead the NFL in gross and net punting and because punters are people too. So Peter King is here. A guy that flies in actually to Minnesota and watches his team and gets around him and sees him on the field and talks to people and is like, oh my gosh, these actually some of these young guys can actually play.
You want the other one right now?
Yeah, that's the better one. I bet John wasn't this picky with the net.
Why are all these bags in?
Just leave that net down there. Yeah, they're both bad.
Have you seen this yet, Danny?
This is the one you sent me down here with.
Maybe not. Maybe they're both bad. Is it upside down?
No, it's not upside down.
No. I don't get it. I'm going to get over it.
He's a very OCD punter.
Yeah. He can be as picky as he wants as long as he punts the ball. He's never scored a point.
Dude, you are anti-Michael Dixon.
That's not true. I like watching it.
I think you're a little anti-Dixon.
Here's what I am. If you're going to make the case that the Seahawks are going to be better than national pundits think, and there has been a growing... Peter King and Dan Graziano from ESPN.com have both kind of chimed up and said, hey, I think they're going to be better. Meanwhile, The Ringer on their podcast, this was pointed out to me. It was like 5 minutes that they talked about whether the Seahawks have a chance to have the top overall pick. And if they do you take a quarterback? That's a legitimate.
Really?
That's a legitimate.
Is that a lack of belief of Russell or a lack of belief in Pete or the rest of the roster?
Combination of all of them.
Crazy.
And like that sort of thing, I look at it and say, is this defense worse than it was in its star power than 2011? When 2011 started, you had a young safety in Earl Thomas. What else did you have that you would say was a good defensive player? On 2011.
Aaron Curry?
Aaron Curry was absolutely not. You knew that he was on the last step.
Kidding.
Dubbed the least instinctive football player ever.
Just kidding. I know it wasn't
Aaron Curry. Hey, Danny, sign me up. I'll take 9-7.
I mean, those sort of things that were the guys that were there.
And people were still talking about Lofa, right? Or is that the year they canned
him? No, they cut him after that. And it turned out to be a really good team.
David Hawthorne, the heater?
Bobby Wagner right now and KJ Wright give them more established talent than any. We'll see if they're going to be good. They've certainly got a shot to be good.
Danny, switching gears, you wrote this column yesterday after you traveled to Atlanta for the UW game against Auburn, and it's entitled "Don't Direct Your Frustration from UW's Loss to Auburn at Jake Browning."
I would change the headline of that. Don't direct anger. It's okay to be frustrated, and I think any Husky fan was frustrated, not just with the fact the team didn't win, but with the way Jake played and some of the decisions that he made there. It's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to be disappointed. And I think it's even okay to say, man, I really thought he'd be further along than this right now. It's wrong to be angry at him. It's wrong to be disappointed in him.
What's the difference?
Because it's directed and there's a judgment being cast on a college athlete where you've given up the hope that he can be better. Where you've decided and concluded, as people have said, he's a trash QB. Like, because that's the new description that all the kids use now. Mm. It's trash. It's trash. He's trash.
I thought he was just basic.
Well, that's
me.
That was 6 years ago, bro. You're way behind.
Well, I'm just extra.
You are doing extra. That reality, and it's because I saw a fan in front of me say and react after the third down sack, which, look, that looked a lot like the play at the end of the Stanford game to me, and it's frustrating, who then concludes with anger toward Jake. And I think it's wrong. It's really wrong. And I would challenge anyone that feels that way. That's the same sort of ethic that leads to booing a college athlete, which I believe is completely inappropriate.
This one's hard for me. I think I understand everything you're saying. You're probably right. I think we've blurred the lines between pro and college sports so much that it's hard for me and a lot of people to truly know where that line is, what's appropriate and what isn't. You can praise them. You can make them a deity. You can do all the things for a college athlete that are positive, but it doesn't come with the other side of it the way a pro athlete does. That one's hard for me. That's the first part that's hard for me. The other part is, I'll get to the other part in a second. What do you make of that?
I understand.
It's real hard, and especially in the game. When you got people there who are liquored up and they're yelling and screaming and they're in that intensity.
This isn't hey, we need to change this behavior right now.
Right.
I think that behavior is always going to exist. And look, I've partaken in it. Like, I'm not going to be someone that sits there and says that, hey, I've always been great. Like, I called Siler Miles, Siley Myrus, and all of these different things that are. But in your rational point, when you look back at your behavior, I would say that it's wrong to be that critical of a college athlete. And this is what I would. You can't give up the hope that that player is going to be better. And if you want someone to play ahead of him, that's one thing. But to cast a dismissive judgment over what is still an amateur athlete, I think you're getting college sports wrong and what makes college sports great. This is what makes college sports great to me, is that I have a connection to all of those kids on that team. Or if you don't want me to call them kids, all of the young men that are on that team. Because we're at the same school. Going to that game summons up the same memories that I have. There's an element of it. I am an older person from that same institution. And the reason I feel so strongly about them is because we're connected by that school.
Yeah.
And I want them to become the best they can possibly be. I do. I earnestly want that for all of them. And if for whatever reason, their own talent level, their own work ethic, they don't get to that, it doesn't happen for them. You know who's most bummed about that? Them. And I want to have some compassion and some encouragement to them that, hey, man, just do the best you can. And if you're not the best, I'm okay with that. And I'm not going to think you're trash.
So Damon was in here yesterday. It was fun. We went downstairs and taped a little thing that'll come out here, I think, locally on Q13. It's really a story about Piala. But we were starting to talk about quarterback and our days at Piala. And it's interesting, Danny, as I hear you talk, a million thoughts flood my mind. I think of my mom, who was unable to sit in the stands. And this was 20 years ago. This was like 1997. Like, she'd come to the games, and it was so bad that she just, it was personal. And we'd been quarterback in a long time, much like Jake, right? This wasn't the first year where, oh, my gosh, this is beautiful, and you're winning and all. Nope, it's 7 years, so there's a fatigue. There's an underachievement. There's all of that. And it got so just awful, she couldn't come in the stadium. And that's just part of the deal. I also, sitting here, shared the story yesterday. You know what I loved more than anything? I loved when people booed me. Not my home fans, but I love when people hated me. I loved going to those high school gyms, and people would just like just tear me down. Like, I just loved that competition to just prove them wrong. You know, and even if it got horrifically personal, there was something almost a testament to, man, if they take that much umbrage with me, I must be doing something right. Mm. Like, let's go. Like, come bring it. Come bring that on.
But you're home fans, man.
I guess it's a part of me, though, that says if you want to get excited and have your name in the paper and have the big spread on how great Brock Heward is, yes, and this and that, when you don't live up to it, you got to deal with the other side of that, yeah, whether you're in college or not. If you don't want the negative and you don't want that, then don't give me the positive on the other side that is effusive in praise and glorifies that kid, because I don't know that that's healthy or the right way to handle it either.
Yeah, I don't know if the praise and the attention that we heap on it, and I might be out of whack with how much excitement that I get.
Yeah.
Do you find it hard sitting in this seat doing this job? Do you find it hard being critical of college kids more so than
I want to keep a line. Is it hard? It's not hard for me. I want to keep a line in my mind about it. It's interesting that you brought up your brother. A couple of my college roommates, I know one of them still has it. I wrote something about Damon that thankfully was never published.
Huh.
And it was after, I think, the loss to Notre Dame, mm-hmm, his senior year, where he had led the team down, and they almost – it was another pick six situation. Yep. Allen Rawson was, yep, the cornerback that returned it. And it was sort of this dismissive – it was mean-spirited about how Damon would take you to the brink of being satisfied, excited, and then he would just break your heart. And it was profane, and I'm thankful that it wasn't published. – And I also look back, and it's embarrassing to me that that's out there, because that level of – and that's being a fan, and that's being – look, I'm as into Husky football as anybody ever is. But that's where it goes over the line where, mm-hmm, you know what I look back now and think? That Damon was the quarterback of a team that was really, really close to being really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that the disappointment from that year – Damon was a really good college quarterback who probably doesn't get his due because of that throw in Oregon. And those sort of things, and as a fan base, I think Washington can be really tough on its quarterbacks. And maybe all fan bases are, but I don't really care about other fan bases. And what I hate to see is that there is actual hostility being aimed at Jake Browning, mm-hmm, who all he did was come up here and start as a true freshman and was better than anybody had a right to see and had a great 3 months. And maybe he's reached his ceiling. And if that's the case, like, we shouldn't be angry at him over that. We should feel any disappointment we feel should be tinged with the compassion that this guy who plays for a school that touches these heartstrings for us isn't able to do it.
I love that this is your opinion.
Yeah.
I don't agree with you at all, but I love it. I think it's a noble way of looking at sports. I come away thinking that Jake Browning has been disappointing, and that's partially on him, or it's on Chris Peterson and the rest of the coaching staff.
Yes, but you also said yesterday
they had 4 years to either develop him better or to find somebody else to
do
the
job. Said yesterday that you feel a little awkward. You're not going to take it personally.
I was trying to be nice.
Huh?
I was being nice. Like, yeah. I know that people get mad when you take shots at college kids.
Yep.
Danny is right. Like, there is something dirty about it. But then don't build Flutie Pass as a road between the Natick and Framingham malls after the guy throws one of the greatest plays of all time.
Mm.
Don't glorify and put Brock on the cover of every – don't tell me Baker Mayfield and this and that and all the glory.
Like, but it's a trade-off of all of the fame
goes.
And all the attention and everything else.
The kids aren't signing up for that, right?
I think they are.
Well, they're getting it, but they're not – it's not a profession. They're choosing to go to school there. And because of what they do and because of what they – and I'm not going to say that there's some sort of – they're victimized by the attention that's given to them.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way I feel about my college football team. And I think that more people, if they have that emotional connection and think about it honestly, it's a better connection with your school when you have that bit of compassion that's mixed in and connection with them.
I think it's certainly healthier. I don't think there's any question that it's healthier, for sure.
Can you apologize to Damon for me?
I will. I'll give you his number. You want his number?
I've got his number.
We'll record.
I saw him down in Atlanta.
Can you leave him like a video message or something?
Yeah. He had no clue it was me. I saw him down in Atlanta on the street.
Yes. Oh, and your giddy up?
Yeah.
Hey, clue it was me.
You can
me.
Go read Danny's full thoughts on this. 710sports.com, where Danny's always right and does a great job. And you can hear him talk, of course, every afternoon.
Thanks, Danny.
You bet. Talk to you soon.
Danny David Moore. Thanks, buddy. Washington Wednesday is up next. Brock, I expect some hardcore criticism and maybe even hatred of a few of these Washington players coming up next. I'm Brock.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock and Salk here. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Fun to have Danny O'Neill in, and really good debate there on what it's like to deal with college athletes, what's appropriate, what isn't. I got a good text here that I really tend to agree with that just says, if you're worried about criticizing young athletes because of their inability to handle it, you should be just as worried about giving them praise for the same reason. And I think I agree with that. If you only praise and never comes with the criticism, I think you create monsters in an entirely different way. So anyway, it's a good conversation. Good article by Danny at 710sports.com. Let me remind everybody, Seahawks is underway here. So you can join 710 ESPN Seattle for Hawks Live every Thursday at 7 o'clock at Pearl Seafood and Oyster Bar in Bellevue. There's a preview of this week's game, an in-person player interview. Hawks Live brought to you by Heritage Distillings Batch Number 12 Vodka, Legendary Donuts, and Pearl Seafood and Oyster Bar. Dave Wyman hosting this year. He'll be in the one chair hosting the whole thing. Should be a blast, along with Paul Moyer and a Seahawks guest every time. So it's over at Pearl. It is Hawks Live. Of course, Brock, it is 8:30. It's Wednesday, and that means it's time for Washington Wednesday.
Washington Wednesdays, every Wednesday throughout the college football season.
All right, so this is our version of Washington Wednesday. Each of the shows on the station has their own segment they do every Wednesday, talking Huskies, Brock. Clayton's will be coming up a little later, and I think it's 11 o'clock, as they interview somebody from the Pac-12 network. I believe it's Yogi Roth today, so you can get ready for that. Each of the shows will be previewing the game in some way, but you've been, as you always do, texting with your buddies across the national college football landscape. What are they saying?
Yeah, I think a few different things here. First and foremost, I reached out to the crew that called the game, Steve Levy and Greasy and McShay. I thought they did a really nice job, and it's fun to see the sky cam and the referee cam and the first down cam and the pylon cam and just about every piece of technology thrown at that game. And it got a monster rating. I think it was the second highest rated game outside of Michigan Notre Dame of the entire weekend.
Wow.
It outpaced even Alabama and Louisville that followed it. So a monster top 10 matchup that I think lived up to the billing. I would say just kind of globally here before I give you McShay's comments from the sidelines, I think globally game recognizes game. And even the folks down south, the Paul Feinbaums, the David Pollocks, those guys said, yeah, man, that's what we need in college football. Like, those are two really good teams that went at it. One team made a few plays in the fourth quarter. The other team did not. But, you know, that's what you want. That gives us all an opportunity to say, okay, this is where these two stand over the course of a season and is the kind of inputs that committee needs to make their decision. So that was some of the vibe, I think, down south. Out west, you know, Joel Klatt was certainly frustrated with some of the non-calls. I think out west, there's some of the feeling like, hey, man, you go down in SEC territory, and even though that's not an SEC officiating crew, and I think that's an important point to make here, you know, in some of these games and these neutral field games and early in the season games, you don't just get the home cooking. Like, oh, gosh, you know, there's Billy Bob from, you know, Alabama. Guess what? He's not going to make that call at that moment. He's going to keep the flag. And it's not that at all. Those guys were all there doing their job. But there was certainly a sentiment that that phantom face mask on Auburn's final drive, that the collision to Jake Browning, that the non-call there, missed both from on the field and in the replay booth, that can't happen. And maybe if it was in Seattle or maybe it was somewhere on the West Coast and at Vegas in a neutral field, that call does happen. So that was some of the sentiment out west. Now, for McShay, who was on the sidelines and was there, I just asked him the question that, you know, we posed yesterday. Encouraged or discouraged when it comes to UW and what you saw? And he said, oh, definitely encouraged. Auburn's a really good team. They're not Alabama. They're not Clemson, but maybe just a little notch below. Jarrett Stidham had one of his career best days. It was a true road game for the Huskies coming across the country against one of the best defensive lines you're going to face. If Washington had made one or two more plays in the red zone, they pull off the upset. So remember, they were underdogs in that game, about 1.5 points, and that's about what the game ended up being. You know, it was right there. So I think both globally that was the feel. I think those that were there, Danny was there. I think you and I watching that game, and this was not a JV varsity. This was not the big bad boys from down south that were just going to physically wallop this team from west of the Mississippi. This was a toe-to-toe, punch-for-punch, and their guy made a few more plays in the red zone than your guy did. So I think that was my overall Washington Wednesday.
Yeah, that's probably why they don't fall out of the top 10. I mean, if they had gotten smacked around a little bit down there, you probably do. You probably drop down to 12, 13, 15, somewhere in that range.
Yep.
But instead, I think you're right. People recognize that they were right there with them, and unfortunately, you know, Jake didn't make the plays he needed to. There's some play calling issues. There's a couple of bad calls. You throw it all together in a blender, and you end up losing a five-point game basically on the road in Atlanta. And that's going to drop you. Obviously, you lost, but it's not going to destroy you.
I think that's very fair.
Which is good news for them. And if you're a Husky fan, I would hope you're psyched. Howdy, are you psyched? Like, when you saw the rankings come out yesterday and you see number 9, I would assume you're psyched yesterday.
I was psyched and shocked.
Yeah.
Completely shocked. I mean, the fact that, like, they could lose that game and only drop that far. You only have to have basically 5 teams ahead of you lose once. Mm-hmm. You should move up every single time somebody loses. So, yeah, I mean, they're legitimately in the position where they should be in the top 4 by the end of the season if they went out.
Still the highest ranked in the Pac-12. USC beats UNLV. They fall a couple spots because that was, you know, they poorly played in a game into the third quarter, and they just kind of flopped around the field and eventually had a little bit more gas than, obviously, athletically, than USC had to go and take it. Now, you know, I think those two play, and it's what you need. You know, you need USC to play Stanford. You need Washington to play Auburn. You need those kind of matchups to see just where you are. And I think, quite honestly, now that we've had, 4 or 5 days coming off of this, the different conversations we had, that one we just had, I think a ton of the onus now falls on Bush Hamden, on Chris Peterson, on Jimmy Lake to say, okay, this is what we are, this is what we're not, and if we're going to beat Utah now in 10 days, we've got to be a lot better as a staff, putting our guys in a better position from the onset to get this thing done.
Bunch of interesting texts coming in. Excuses are for losers. They lost. So you're saying there are moral victories. Stop putting lipstick on a pig. The season is over. I usually am right there with you with all of those things. I am always, stop making excuses. Stop, forget moral victory. The difference is this isn't professional sports. It's college sports. There are moral victories in college sports. I think that's dumb. I think that makes no sense. I think that's a major problem with the entire system in college football.
I don't think it's moral. But, let me change.
But there are moral victories in college sports. If you hung with them and didn't win, you only dropped 3 spots instead of 10.
It's semantics, but I would call that a perception victory. Yeah. It's not a moral victory. No one feels good about that. There's not one person. Just listen to Chris Peterson this week, and I'm sure they get ready for North Dakota. There wasn't one person that felt good on that long play right home. Like, oh. Yeah, that was a moral victory. Like, we played with them. There's not one of them there. Now, can there be perception victories? Yes, there can.
It's sort of the same thing, man. I mean, I honestly think that that's just semantics. But what the argument is, are you making excuses for the team?
No.
And the reality is, it's college football. No.
Here, you want my non-excuses?
Here it is.
You didn't call a good enough game. You didn't execute a good enough game. You didn't finish in the fourth quarter when it matters, and you didn't finish in the second half on the road when you have to. There's no excuses there.
But when that happens with an NFL team, you say, you lost, you weren't good enough. When it happens with a college football team, you say, you lost, you were almost good enough, and that matters, which is so strange. I mean, again,
but in the NFL, you can go 9-7, New York Giants, get hot at the end, and go win a Super Bowl. In college, I mean, they all have trade-offs back and forth. So in college football, you can't. If they lose to Utah on Saturday in Salt Lake, they're not making the playoff. You can say that. You know, that's the beauty and the curse of college football. And in the NFL, you can lose and you can have all these. Well, there's no moral victory. There's no perception. You're right. But and you can also go 9-7,
but they
10-6 and get in the playoffs and run your way to a Super Bowl.
I agree. And the thing that I think surprised people, one of the reasons I think the Huskies only dropped 3 spots is there were some parts of that team that were better than expected. There were a lot of question marks about who was going to catch the ball. And all of a sudden, the three starting wide receivers played really, really well. And you go, wait a minute. Fuller might be legit. Ty Jones might be legit. Okay, hold on a second. That's what they're doing against the SEC. What are they going to do in the Pac-12?
Ezra Pound with that beard is just amazing.
Danny, by the way, knew exactly who Ezra Pound was. He didn't have to even ask.
It's Pound. It's on Pound.
It's Ezra Pound.
Ezra Pound.
Right, but it's Quentin Pounds.
How he does that? A poet and a receiver.
I know. He's very impressive.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, he didn't even know it. So they were better than expected. The front seven, as you mentioned, was better than expected. You start putting a few of those things together, you know the running game is going to look even better against Pac-12 competition, and it's going to be an interesting year.
I'm going to say it right now.
I'm excited
that
for this
game
Washington
in Utah Wednesdays. Is going to be and could very well be a tougher game than Auburn.
All right. Well, stick around throughout the day. Washington Wednesday, every Wednesday, talking Huskies here on 710 ESPN Seattle throughout the day. John Morosi is going to be on talking about the big fight and talk some baseball with us coming up in 20 minutes. Right after good news, bad news, no news, and a stone-cold killer last night at Key Arena. It's next. I'm Brock and Salt.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, time for a little good news, bad news, no news, where we talk to John Morosi about the Mariners. Them fighting M's. Fighting last night, or at least before the game yesterday afternoon. Just got my first day school pics of the kids here.
Oh,
sorry. I'm distracted.
How are you even here, bro?
It's hard. It's hard, I will say. I almost didn't come in. I mean, I know it's important, but I did. I made it. What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Sue Bird led the Storm to a Game 5 win to clinch the Western Conference Championship.
Baller, shot caller. 0 for 8 in the second and third quarter. Sat down and watched. And thankfully, his little Jordan Canada came in, was just, you know, a ball of electricity, kept him in the game and then some. And it was her teammate, Brianna Stewart, or UConn Husky, that is just bold. They're just tough. They're just winners. Said, hey, Sue, you may want to use your legs a little bit. Got her legs involved, made all five just clutch shots in that fourth quarter. It was awesome. It was great news, and they'll be playing for the title beginning Friday.
Yeah, it was amazing. Obviously, this is great news. This is a blast to watch. I started off the show with this, and I know it's polarizing. I know there's a lot of people who don't want to hear about women's basketball, and I've probably been in that camp at times in my life also, but it's a blast. I just really enjoyed watching it last night. I watched the entire fourth quarter, some of the earlier parts of the game. I enjoyed it more than I like watching the NBA, which doesn't take much, but was true. I just thought it was great. And Sue Bird, watching her do that in the fourth quarter was, dude, that was special. That is dominating a game.
So it's not the Storm and the Mystics play in the WNBA Finals.
No, I don't think their league is fixed, at least not yet.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners got in a fight in the clubhouse before last night's game.
Yeah, there'll be people to tell you this is no news.
No news.
It's bad news.
No news.
This is bad news. Why did it happen?
No, Mike, this happens all the time.
Okay, that's
don't worry about
there,
it.
There are going to be people, as so I said,
you know, there Wassel are people and I got who will tell you it yesterday is no in the news. Sports pit, right?
We have fights in the sports pit every week.
I mean, you see what? You see Wassel's tweet last night?
I saw Wassel dropkick Stacy last week, actually.
Dude, I saw Bob put... What, you think Graz has stitches?
Rear naked choke.
Graz doesn't have stitches. Graz got pile drive.
Like, metaphorically,
Bob,
right?
Bob picked up that man and just pile drive him in.
You think Bob could pick up Graz?
No, because he wouldn't touch him.
No, I don't think he would either. No.
Have to disinfect everything.
Do you think Bob could pick up Graz?
In a scuba diving suit? Yes.
Do you think Bob could pick up Graz?
No.
You give him gloves. He could wear surgical gloves. Do you think Bob, like Hulk Hogan picked up Andre the Giant for the body slam?
Yeah.
Do you think Bob could pick up Graz?
I think Graz is about 255 before surgery. He's lost 20, 230. Yes, he could do that. He's down 20 after
but
surgery,
but it's hard
bro.
To pick up a human. A human isn't like a weight where like you have easy
Bob
grips.
Bob does that jujitsu stuff.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's easy to pick up a human above your head.
Oh, above his head?
Yes.
No.
Could he pick up Graz?
Like a body slam,
Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant.
Well, he didn't put him above his head.
Well, he got him up in
Andre
the air.
Andre jumped into his lap like Kyle and Nelly Cruz do. So that for sure. Above his head, no chance.
Why? He could lift 235 above his head, right?
It's different with human weight.
That's my point.
No.
I like the idea of him trying. Do you think we could set this up?
I would love it.
Tomorrow, Bob picks up Graz.
Good news, bad news, no news.
It was bad news, by the way.
It was no news. Right.
Amara Darbo failed his physical and was released by the Patriots, and I was just looking on Instagram.
You see
he
that?
Had surgery.
Yeah, he did. He's sitting in the hospital bed there.
Massachusetts General Hospital.
Surgery on the old clavicle, I believe, is what Clayton said. Shoulder, who knows what it was. It was bothering him. Does that soften the blow a little bit of all of this talk of Amara Darbo during the preseason? Where is he? Put him in the same silo as CJ Procise. The guy actually tried to fight back, could never get back. Mm. Ultimately has surgery. He's going to miss this season. That's bad news for Amara Darbo. He's a young player. He's a talented player. I don't ever like to see careers derailed because of injury. Bad news.
No news. Sorry, gone. See you later. But I'm glad he's not going to be with the Patriots to have some sort of enormous moment later that'll come back to haunt the Seahawks. No news when it's all said and done. Jeez, these texts.
What?
Graz is really top heavy. It'd be super awkward to try to pick him up like that.
Eldon Campbell. You talked about Eldon Campbell. There's some.
Eldon Campbell is a really strange shape.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Welcome to Seattle in 2018, Salk. There's such a thing as women's basketball. Did you know women can vote now, too? All right. They can? Is it true? Where have I been? Suffrage.
Adam Schefter tweets 6 minutes ago that the Cowboys have upped their offer for Earl Thomas to a second-round pick. Whoa. Per sources, Seattle is interested. It wants more.
Wow. More than a second?
Wow. Okay, John.
Take a second.
Wait, you're talking a second-round pick.
I'm just going to take a second. Anybody else going to take a second at this point? Anyone?
Third round, no. Second round?
Wait, hold on. Yeah. Third round, maybe.
Third round, no.
Third round, maybe to probably. Second round?
Third round's a compensatory wash.
Sign me. No, there's no compensatory picks. Stop. Stop pretending compensatory picks are a real thing. Maybe they happen, maybe not.
There's been zero compensatory picks ever in the history of the NFL that have been good.
Also, you can't count on them.
It's a wash, so it's second, maybe.
Maybe.
I love you, John. Stan, put Jerry Jones up against that wall.
Trade him!
Trade him for a second-round pick.
He's a free agent. He's going to sit out 10 weeks. You'd rather have him play six games than get a second-round pick that you don't have?
Yeah, I'll take that.
No, we'd rather have six games of Earl Thomas in a 7-9 season. Thank you.
Whoa.
Easy. Whoa.
Goodness.
Gosh, Kyle. That is good news, bad news, no news.
Holy, Kyle.
I mean, what are we doing here? Trade him. Second round pick. Let's go.
I'm with you. Second round pick. Come on. I saw that from Schefter.
Principle, Mike. You love when teams follow principles. And the principle is you asked us to do something specifically that detrimented the team. We're not going to cave to your demands. That's it. That's our principle.
I don't think this is about principle.
I think it's about principle.
Why?
You said you need to trade me or give me a contract. I'm not going to do either one of those things because I make the terms, not you, Earl.
Yeah, but these are terms that are good for you. You're not going to do terms that you don't like. Second round pick is good for you.
I don't think so.
First round? You want a first round?
Principles.
You can go ahead and say that, but my principle is I want to do what's good for me. It's not giving in to you.
It's the principle.
It's about doing what's right for the team. What's right for the team is a second round pick. That's the best you can do. That's the difference.
Okay, sends the wrong message.
I'm going to put a poll out. Okay,
you're just being spiteful.
At Brock ESPN, I'm going to put a poll out.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Kyle, you nailed this last time. What's the percentage right now of Seahawks fans, when I tweet this out in a minute?
They'll take a second rounder?
Yes. You take Dallas' second for Earl right now.
85%.
Say yes?
85% will say yes to that.
I don't trust you. Kyle, you're the poll
68%.
Master. 68. Okay, I'll put this
Howdy?
35%.
Come on. Stop. Get out of here. Would you stop talking?
But they do kind of have the Cowboys over a barrel right now. Maybe you wait another 2 days and see, like, all right, well, we don't need to trade them.
I mean, is there an argument to be made that you wait during the season and then that you actually, like, make the Cowboys desperate and they give you more? The problem is, what if the Cowboys stink? Then they don't even need it. Then they're like, forget it. I don't even want him. We're not good. And the Cowboys might not be good. What if by the time they're willing to trade, it's like the Cowboys are 3-6? Like, well, oh, well, they don't need Earl Thomas at that point. They're not going to trade for him. I think you do it. You do it now. Second round pick? I would absolutely get that done. All right, John Morosi is going to join us. The heck happened in this Seattle clubhouse yesterday, and is it the norm? It's all next here on Brock and Salk.